Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 616. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
And we have very few Mitchell Fain on the couch before you sail off into the blue seas.
Yeah, I'm about to sail away.
You're about to come sail away.
Come sail away. Yes.
On your second city cruise. And, I mean, before you leave, there's going to be tons of news. And when you get back, we're going to see the fruition of a lot of this. This is a big week in that the U.S. Supreme Court announced the date that they are going to hear the arguments in the marriage cases. It's going to be Tuesday, April 28th, folks. That's going to be a big day. So
I know,
a lot of people are saying, marriage has so much momentum and all this kind of stuff, you know, folks, I mean, definitely those of you who write checks to organizations, this is definitely the time as they need, you know, they need all hands on deck
because
to prep for what's
going
to happen on the 28th.
Happening, and the backlash they've discovered is that
a lot of states
doing this anti-discrimination bills.
That's right.
In other words, these sort of religious freedom bills saying you can't protect gay people because if you protect gay people, then as a Christian, I'll be persecuted. Can we just say once for all?
Not all of them, though. Some of them are also strictly not religious. Some of them are strictly like judges and attorney generals.
Let's be honest. Every single argument against gay rights is based in the religion. Every single argument. So let's just be honest about that. I'm not saying it's the faith. I'm talking about the organized religions. And so what's happening is people, they're using religion in the same way that the Republican Party has hijacked religion. Say, like, if you really believe in God in America, you'll be a Republican, right? If they're making people feel like if you really believe in Jesus Christ, then you have to agree with us. So let's just call it what it is.
I'm just saying at this point, it's not just like a radical, Christian conservative organization that's doing this now. It is actually, you know, attorney generals and...
I know, but their arguments...
I mean, Alabama this past
week.
Their
arguments are religious at this point because all of the data, all of the statistics about gay marriage, I mean, all of the proof, like look at Massachusetts, right? The world did not end. All of the arguments from the attorney generals down to is religious.
Yeah.
And so
some of it's cultural too.
We're going to have to deal with this.
Cultural and religious. I mean, I hear what you're saying.
But when
you say cultural,
it's the culture of religion.
It's not the culture of religion because I can look at conservative Cuban Miami and they're not really talking about Jesus Christ. It's just cultural there that they are fighting in Florida against, LGBT community.
I disagree. It is about Jesus Christ. It is cultural, but it's cultural because the Latino culture is very Catholic. It comes down to the religion. Now, I'm not talking about people who believe something that helps them get through the day. You know, we've talked about this distinction. I'm talking about an organized religion, and this is what it's coming down to, and these arguments that are being used against us. It will be interesting to see.
So would you think that there are atheists who are not scared of, like, gay people having marriage equality? Because I do. I actually think there are atheists, and I think there are people who don't believe in Jesus Christ who also...
I've never heard one.
Well, I'm curious about that, if anybody else has. Because honestly, I'm not saying you're not right on a majority of it, but a lot of people are cloaked...
to make a point.
A lot of people are cloaked and behind the fact that, you know, because I've easily thought that it was just always, you know, very religious people or whatever as well. And it's just based on... you know, new people that I know in different communities and, you know, and stuff that's going on.
My point is that the argument, the backlash that's happening, the worrisome part of it, the backlash is about these religious freedom bills as if somehow,
right.
Let's just admit that there is no attack on Christianity in this country. This is a Christian, this nation is a majority Christian. This pretend...
Run by the Mormon media.
Exactly. Exactly.
And run everyone, by the Jewish dollar.
Everyone wants to think that's true, but can I say two words to you? No, can I say three words to you? Coke, Murdoch. These are not Jewish people.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's be honest about where the real money in this country is.
Yeah.
That stereotype about the Jews, I mean, I know that you were being funny.
I was just being funny. But I was going to say Hollywood.
But yeah, exactly.
Running images.
Jews do it, huh?
Everyone in Hollywood.
It's just that... We just as we go forward, I think it's just important to at least acknowledge where this is coming from.
No, I think systemically it is absolutely coming from faith and religion and
not faith,
and
but religion. And religion is like some organized block of people who don't want their power taken away.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, obviously, God knows that they're, pun intended, that there have been more, strife over religion, Christian or not, as we're watching what's happening in Muslim worlds right now with ISIS, like, you know, knocking down religious icons and shattering them, and they're these, catastrophic, historical artifacts that are being crushed and smashed, in the name of like eradicating religious icons.
I remember it happened in the early 90s,
mm-hmm.
Before the Taliban, right? And then I remember everybody saying, oh, that's such a shame. And then several friends of mine were like, this is very bad news, mm-hmm. like on a much bigger global mm-hmm. scale. And then 9/11 happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess the point that I'm trying to make is, we need to acknowledge before we go forward that if you are against gay marriage or equal protection for gay people, it does in fact mean that you're a bigot. You can deal with that however you want, and you can admit it, but you are in fact a bigot. And do not couch it in this religious freedom thing, because there is no war on Christianity. I just read it in New York City. They added two Muslim holidays to the school calendar, and everyone lost their minds. Mm-hmm. Because Christmas and Easter were not listed, as if somehow Christmas and Easter were being threatened. Does Christmas now starts in October and ends in March? Do we really think that Christian and then Easter is not on the calendar, because Easter is always on a Sunday and it's always on spring break, so there is no school. There's no reason for it to be on a calendar,
right?
And so this knee jerk reaction of like, see, Christianity is under attack. Everyone relax.
Yep.
Christianity is not under attack in America. I get that in the Muslim countries, or radical Muslim, sure.
Yeah.
But in America, this argument that like somehow Christians are the victims, they're the like accursed minority, is some of the most effective propaganda flim-flam I've heard since they turned John Kerry, the actual Vietnam hero, into some sort of like un-American, while George Bush, who missed the war doing coke, was somehow the war hero in his flak suit.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, the propaganda is
the propaganda I'm talking about.
Is crazy. And I mean, you know, what's interesting is that you mentioned these anti-LGBT bills that have kind of been coming up. They've sprung up in 25 states.
That's what I mean.
I mean, there was this doctor in Michigan that just happened, you know, this past week, where he refused to treat an infant because her parents were lesbian. You know, so it's happening all over. It, you know, I often have said, you know, Tennessee will take it all the way, which we are, to the Supreme Court. But it's not just Tennessee, Michigan.
I know, but it's almost interesting, right? The longer Tennessee holds on, the more the victory there will.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because now those four states that are a little line, like a little jig-jag, like Harry Potter's scar on his forehead, through the center of the United States, you know, from Michigan to Ohio to Kentucky to Tennessee, that is this little you know, thing that's taking us to the...
Tooth and nail.
So anyhow, everybody mark that date, March 28th. That's going to be a big date.
April 28th.
You know, April 28th. Yeah. Sorry, what did I say, March? April 28th. And, you know...
I may have to Skype you.
An opportunity to definitely, you know... Because what's going to happen until the Supreme Court now decides is things like in Alabama, where the governor is saying, no, we're going to uphold federal law. We'd never do anything against it. And then an attorney general or judges are going to go, nope, don't marry anybody. So it's...
Right.
You know, it's much of what we saw in the civil rights movement. You know, this past weekend was the 50th anniversary of Selma and even voting rights for blacks, you know, 50 years
have been rolled back
ago. You know, so it's like, yeah, and now they're rolling those back saying we don't need them anymore. But I beg to differ.
Yes.
The other thing that happened.
Can I just say that?
Yeah.
Before we started recording, we were having some silly conversation about like music or like music.
Well, we're going to be talking
today
about...
And then we just dove so hard into politics.
We are going to be talking today about LGBT images on television. But just one other real quick news story before we go to the real news, which is that there has been a new bill introduced in the Illinois General Assembly by openly lesbian Illinois Rep. Kelly Cassidy. It's House Bill 217, Senate Bill 111. It's the Conversion Therapy Prohibition Act, which basically says, you know, you protects the health of LGBT youth in Illinois from harmful and ineffective sexual orientation and gender identity change efforts, which we call conversion therapy, by prohibiting licensed mental health providers from engaging in these efforts. And so there is a petition right now on Equality Illinois' website. I encourage you to sign it. And basically, you know, this every major medical institution and psychiatric institution says that conversion therapy doesn't work
and it's harmful.
And so now, but state by state, we're having to go. I think New Jersey was one of the first people in California to have these laws now on the books. And now Illinois is making strides to be a leader as well one of them. You would think that would be something that would be everywhere. But once again, this is state by state.
Well, because people think it's so interesting how people think, well, stay out of my family, stay out of my decision making with my children. They will, you know, stay out of my personal life, smaller government, until it comes to our lives, right? LGBT lives. And then it's fine to like pass laws against us, right?
Right.
Discrimination laws or marriage laws. But like in this situation, it's a lot of parents saying, I get to have the right to send my kid to this incredibly destructive, harmful, discredited thing if I want to. You actually don't, because that's actually called abuse.
That's right. And I mean, I can't even tell you over the years how many people I have spoken with. I mean, probably most recently was Levi Christ and some other people, you know, who went through conversion therapy and tried.
Friends.
You know, it's a story that those of us in our 30s and 40s and maybe some of you listening in your 20s, I don't know many people in their 20s anymore.
I know. Well, I do. I have to say this.
But, you know, I have gone through it or know people who've gone through it. And we definitely need a law for this. You know, it's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable and not something that, you know,
well, it's not based on science. It's based on bigotry.
Yep.
And unfortunately,
and
all
fear.
Of the people that, including Levi, people that I know, not that I heard the story from Levi, but I know having seen his concert many times, that he's, you know, comes from a family of faith and religion.
Yeah.
Every single person I know who's been put through this, it had a Jesus bent.
Yeah.
Not the actual
or
Jesus.
Because I know a number of Mormon people who've gone through it as well.
Yeah, a religious base.
Yeah, a religious base. But you know, we'll keep following that news story.
Sign the petition.
We're
going to ban this shit.
Absolutely. So on today's show, that was all our heavy stuff.
I know, God. I'm exhausted.
Somebody
smoke a joint, for Christ's sake.
Exactly. Mitchell and I have a weekly date night.
Oh, God.
It's called Sitting on This Couch and literally event must-see TV watching. Like, when have you done that? Everything I don't watch in real time, except for I try to watch Empire.
In real time. It's funny
because
we can't stand.
It's like watching the Super Bowl or watching the Oscars.
I have to watch it in real time.
Yeah.
And we have to watch it together.
We both had like a little snafu. We didn't get to watch last week's together. We did watch
it together.
We just had to wait.
And I had to avoid social media.
We were both dying, chewing our nails off.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've watched a show where I literally, at least once an episode, I have to stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Empire deserves all the stuff it's getting, but let's talk about it.
Well, I went to go with our Windy City Times theater series to go see Mr. Burns, a post-electric play Theater Wit, which is really, especially if you're a Simpsons fan, you should definitely go. I've never seen The Simpsons, so that's a whole other podcast that we'll talk about. But
go what?
I know. Anyhow, but I really enjoyed it.
You are Lisa Simpson grown up.
I am truly bizarre. I don't know. But I don't even know what that means.
Exactly. But, everyone who's listening does.
Okay.
Rest assured.
But anyhow, I was asking a lot of the, gay and lesbian people in our group, if they're watching Empire, are they watching Empire? And so many weren't, which was really interesting. They said they were going to, but it is the fastest growing show on network television right now. It has entirely got the hot market of 18.
I read something that it has increased its viewership
exponentially
every week, and that hasn't happened in years because of the way we watch TV now.
That's right.
So that old model of something catches
ratings
on
ratings and stuff doesn't normally,
except it's actually happening in this case.
Well, it is like hit the zeitgeist, honestly, and it is something to watch. And we're going to talk about it. We're also going to talk about history also being made that on primetime television, supposedly the youngest gay kiss in the history of TV happened this past week on ABC Family's The Fosters, which Mitchell and I also both watched, and I watched that show religiously. I love it. And we're going to talk about that. So we're going to break and go to the news and what's happening in the theater world, and then we'll be back with Mitchell and Amy on the couch. TV talks.
You go up, down, up, down, up, down.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. Chicago has several LGBT candidates who either won their February 24th aldermanic races or who will be in runoff elections on April 7th. Alderman Deb Mell of the 33rd Ward got just under the 50% plus one of the vote required to avoid a runoff, while Carlos Ramirez Rosa of the 35th became the first openly gay Latino member of the 50-seat city council. Openly gay Alderman Tom Tunney of the 44th easily bested two challengers, and gay incumbent James Kappelman and lesbian Amy Crawford will face each other in the 46th Ward runoff. Also, gay candidate Raymond Lopez will compete against Rafael Yanez in a 15th Ward runoff.
Alabama Governor Robert Bentley vowed he would never do anything to disobey a federal court ruling when asked about the legal fight over same-sex marriage in the Deep South state. Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore instructed probate judges not to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples despite a federal court ruling that the state's ban on such unions was unconstitutional.
The Indiana Senate passed a controversial religious freedom bill that could potentially allow Indiana businesses to refuse service to newly married same-sex couples. Democrats claim the bill will allow major corporations, everyone from McDonald's to Home Depot, to discriminate. This bill passed on with Republican support, 40-10, and now heads to the House of Representatives.
A federal district court judge has blocked Nebraska's ban on same-sex marriage, setting a 38th state on the likely path to recognizing unions between gay couples. The ruling will take effect March 9th. However, Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts, whose lesbian sister Laura Ricketts co-owns the Chicago Cubs, has filed an appeal.
In Charlotte, North Carolina, local LGBT community leaders are responding with messages of support following the death of a transgender student. Ash Hafner, 16, committed suicide. Hafner had been bullied in school despite receiving support at home and at groups like Time Out Youth.
The West Virginia House of Delegates is considering a bill that would eliminate several LGBT anti-discrimination measures passed in the state. The legislation would prohibit local governments from enacting anti-discrimination protections that are different from those in place at the state level. West Virginia's current anti-discrimination protections do not extend to LGBT individuals. The law would also nullify anti-discrimination protections for LGBT people that are currently in place in six communities, including the capital of Charleston.
The Unicorn, one of the few remaining gay porn shops on 8th Avenue in New York City, closed its doors for good because of a city crackdown and a rent increase. In January, the Department of Buildings issued a violation to the 21-year-old store, saying it was not allowed in the neighborhood because more than 40% of the merchandise was sexual in nature.
Three couples challenging Tennessee's marriage ban filed a brief in the Supreme Court of the United States, asking the court to rule that same-sex couples have the freedom to marry. Same-sex couples can now marry in 37 states and the District of Columbia.
In world news, For the first time, a study showed that a drug used to treat HIV infection can also help prevent it when taken before and after risky sex by gay men. The study, done in France and Canada, is the first to test on-demand use of Truvada, a pill combining two AIDS drugs, by people planning to have risky sex. The uninfected men who took it were 86% less likely to get HIV compared to men given placebos. Daily Truvada pills are used now to prevent HIV infection in people at high risk for it, and studies show the drug helps even when some doses are skipped.
Finland's president has signed the same-sex marriage bill into law, but couples will have to wait until 2017. The new law that will make marriage gender neutral will come into force on March 1st, 2017. This is the first piece of legislation that has been brought to Parliament by the public under the Citizens Initiative and approved as the law of the land.
The Senate of Kazakhstan has passed a draft bill outlawing promotion of non-traditional sexual orientation. The bill, similar to the infamous Russian measure, is reportedly intended to protect children from what is considered harmful information. Although homosexuality has been legal in Kazakhstan since 1998, it is still widely frowned upon in society.
In Australia, Queensland's new Labor government will reinstate civil partnership ceremonies after they were scrapped by the former LNP government. Marriage equality advocates have welcomed the move, but insist civil partnerships are still no substitute for full marriage equality.
In entertainment news, Lady Gaga is going to star in the fifth season of American Horror Story titled Hotel. Gaga will make her appearance in October when Ryan Murphy's acclaimed award-winning anthology next debuts.
HBO will present Bessie on Saturday, May 16th. Starring Oscar nominee Queen Latifah in the title role, Bessie focuses on legendary blues singer Bessie Smith's transformation from a struggling young singer into the Empress of the Blues. The film also stars Oscar winner Monique as blues legend Ma Rainey. Several sources have stated that Smith was bisexual.
Rosie O'Donnell filed for divorce from wife Michelle Rounds in Manhattan State Supreme Court on the grounds of an irretrievably broken relationship. Weeks earlier, O'Donnell, 52, revealed she was separating from Rounds and leaving The View to focus on her health and her children. O'Donnell and Rounds, who was 42 years old, wed quietly in June 2012. Since separating in November, they have shared custody of Dakota, the two-year-old daughter they adopted together. O'Donnell has four other children with her ex-partner, Kelly Carpenter.
The first photo of Best Actor Oscar winner Eddie Redmayne as transgender painter Lily Elbe in the film The Danish Girl has surfaced. Elbe was the first person to successfully undergo gender reassignment surgery. Elbe was born in Denmark in 1882. The film is directed by Tom Hooper, who directed The King's Speech.
Actress Raven Simone has snagged a role on the ABC comedy Blackish, playing Dre's gay sister Rhonda, who is not comfortable discussing her sexuality. She will appear in an episode titled Please Don't Ask, Please Don't Tell. In an October 2014 interview with Oprah Winfrey, Raven Simone said she was in an amazing, happy relationship with her female partner.
Jussie Smollett, the actor who plays Jamal on Empire, has been outed as gay by co-star Malik Yoba. Jussie, he is gay and he's very committed to issues around the LGBT community. He and I have a very close relationship, Yoba told Black Film. However, Smollett has said he is not willing to confirm or deny anything, and Yoba has now backtracked and said that he was speaking of his character and not of the actor.
AMC's hit show, The Walking Dead, has added its first openly gay male couple. On the February 22nd episode, newcomers Aaron and Eric kissed. Reaction on social media was mixed.
Sarah Gilbert and Linda Perry are now parents to a son. The Talk co-host welcomed baby boy Rhodes Emilio Gilbert Perry on February 28th.
Catwoman's relationship with Batman has become more explicit in recent years. However, now, the feline anti-heroes writer, Genevieve Valentine, has revealed that Selina Kyle is now officially canon bisexual in the DC Comics universe. The revelation occurred in Catwoman 39, out now, in which Kyle shares a kiss with a female rival. In addition to Catwoman, Green Lantern Alan Scott was revamped to be gay, and Catman, a longtime second stringer, has recently been revamped as bisexual as well.
Naya Rivera, who plays Santana on Glee, and husband Ryan Dorsey are going to be parents. The couple secretly wed last July in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, in a small wedding.
And many people watching this year's Oscars misinterpreted Best Adapted Screenplay winner Graham Moore of The Imitation Game's comments in support of codebreaker Alan Turing, who was prosecuted for homosexuality in Britain and died by suicide, to be a celebration of his own homosexuality. However, Moore later clarified his speech, exclaiming, "I'm not gay, but I've never talked publicly about depression before or any of that, and that was so much of what that movie was about, and it was one of the things that drew me to Alan Turing so much." And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, pig! This is Judy Tenuta, the Lamb Goddess, and you're listening to QueerCast. It makes my arm on slam dance. It could happen.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of March 9th, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Steppenwolf Theater presents Marie Antoinette, a modern take on the young Queen of France called an unconventional, bitingly comic play, a jagged yet elegant historical rip by Time Out New York. Tickets on sale now. Get your seats at steppenwolf.org.
Lifeline Theater continues its 32nd season of Big Stories Up Close with One Came Home, a world premiere adaptation of Amy Timberlake's award-winning coming-of-age novel. One Came Home plays Thursday through Sundays through April 5th. Tickets and more at lifelinetheater.com.
The Broadway smash hit and classic musical comedy La Cage aux Folles is now at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire, playing through March 29th. Feathers get ruffled and households upended in a poignant tale of one family struggle to stay together, stay fabulous, and above all else, stay true to themselves. Visit MarriottTheater.com for tickets and more.
Don't miss the American premiere of the scandalous play The Glass Protégé, a tale of forbidden gay love affair between two male movie stars in 1940s Hollywood, brought to you by Giant Cherry Productions and Glitterati Productions. Tickets available now at theaterwit.org. The Glass Protégé is playing now through March 29th.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller, Bueller, post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
It's not this love, it's these dreams that bring down the me inside. But maybe tonight I'll get the story right. I saw you smiling with hammer to watch, but help me understand, this love isn't your friend. It's just a
So one of the hottest shows, if not the hottest show, this television season has a very LGBT pedigree, not only in the creators, writers, and the people helping helm the show on a weekly basis, but also in the storyline and the themes in which they are trying to explore. I'm talking about none other than the show Empire, written by Danny Strong, who is an Oscar winner. His most recent film that he wrote for was The Butler, where he and his friend Lee Daniels, openly gay African-American director, director of Precious, discuss this idea of a Lion in Winter or King Lear type of story that takes place in the contemporary world of hip-hop. Mm-hmm. And thus Empire was born. Now, these two guys primarily do film. They're not television guys, even though Danny Strong used to be an actor on Gilmore Girls, one of my favorite shows. He played Paris, the very smart friend of Rory Gilmore, who was very anal, her boyfriend. He's a very short man. He's about 5 feet tall.
I knew exactly what it is. And, oh, God, I loved Paris.
Very, very funny. But anyhow, so Danny Strong, Lee Daniels, being of the not of the television world, and Lee Daniels has already said that the pace of doing television is insane.
Insane.
Much different than doing a film, have brought to kind of run the show and executive produce and make sure their vision gets executed. Eileen Chaikin is sitting in that chair, which is the creator and writer and off director of The L Word, which I had many feelings about and voiced them on the podcast, but she's doing a phenomenal job there. And also brought in because this show has music, much in the vein of Glee or Nashville, except it's hip-hop music primarily, R&B or soul music. Brought in Timbaland to oversee the music. So it's
who has
kind of
gay cred because he works with Missy Elliott.
Well, and just because
not
he's
that she's
fabulous.
Out. Not that she's out, but...
and because he's fabulous. But
fabulous. Well, that's what I was saying last night. I was having a discussion about it last night to someone who hadn't seen it, a young person who hadn't seen it, and I said, what's awesome about it, it is both an interesting and well-acted family drama.
Yep.
In that vein of like heightened, this powerful man who wants to give away his empire, but to who? Whether it's, you know,
who king, gets the legacy,
right? Whether it's the king, or whether it's King Lear or King. What's the king in Lion of Winter?
Richard,
isn't
it?
I think so.
No,
one of the Richards,
the Lionhearted, maybe one of the princes, because that was Anthony Hopkins.
So not only is this really beautifully acted at moments, family drama,
right?
You know, some of the scenes between Cookie and the son. And Hakeem, who's the son that she knows the least.
Yes.
Recently, the scenes where he sort of said, you don't care about me.
Yeah.
You know,
that is so Lion and Winter. That
and
whole,
it's so
absolutely.
It's so real. And then it's mixed. So it's a family drama, a valid, well-acted family drama, by the way, beautifully shot by these people from the film world. It's also a campy nighttime soap opera with Taraji P. Henson balancing both of those things.
Yep.
The Alexis Carrington... clothes horse bitchy one-liners.
Yep.
With the ability to snap into such utter kitchen sink realism.
Yep.
Right? Amazing. And then on top of it, it's kind of a hip-hop R&B musical.
Right. And it's really addressing issues of today and issues in the Black community and issues in the hip-hop community. And therefore, the middle son is a singer-songwriter and
Jamal
and gorgeous, played by Jussie Smollett,
oh God,
and happens to
gorgeous.
Be gay, and this whole thing of like him coming out and his dad's disapproval and the homophobia in the LGBT community and the homophobia in the hip-hop, or is it assumed homophobia? Are we seeing experiencing
well,
as
Lee
much
Daniels
of it?
Well, Lee Daniels did an interview where he sort of got taken to task about saying that there was you know, this idea that like Black people are more homophobic. Now, of course, that's not true. Being homophobic has nothing to do with skin color.
Right.
But if we are going back to touch on another conversation, if we're talking about the church culture, well, yes, there is a deep, and Lee Daniels is like, stop pretending that's not true.
Right.
And one of his reasons for doing this show, besides that sort of overarching story, was to talk about those issues.
Yeah.
And so he's using Jamal, and for anyone who sort of like, paying attention to sort of contemporary music, one of the biggest stars of R&B right now, whose next album will people waiting for like crazy, is Frank Ocean.
Yep.
Who came out in his music.
That's right.
Much to the surprise and shock and delight of many.
Right. And instantly nominated for a Grammy.
Right. Well, his. I mean, let's just. I'm just going to say this. When the teens of this. When this decade is written, Channel Orange, Frank Ocean's Channel Orange, will be one of the top 10 albums of this decade.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a masterpiece. But he came out in his music.
Yep.
And so the watching Jamal struggle to come out in his music, which he did do.
Yep. Yeah, and let's play a little clip of part of that song that he did, because I think it's really, really cool that, you know, we got to experience it when he experienced it, when the television experienced it, all through this song.
You and I stood up.
And danced.
We did.
Dance.
That's Kanye's workout plan. I call that baby fat. Baby fat. Cause your show look good to me, I think. You're so beautiful.
Chase the kind of song that makes a man love a man, a man love a man.
literally the anthem of the year to me.
It is. It's so funny, too, because the song is this sort of wildly over-sexualized song about shake the fat ass.
Yeah.
And it's a very sexual song, but the fact that he flipped it and made it about a boy.
Right.
When a man, you know.
When a man loves a man.
But the scene itself was so exciting.
Yeah.
And then the various shots of, like, at one point, Andre is like, he just came out. And
yeah, Andre's the oldest son. So there's just, if in case you're not watching it, Terrence Howard plays the father.
The patriarch.
The patriarch, the man who from the streets became this hip-hop mogul.
With his wife at the time, Cookie.
Right.
Who, they started their business on some shady dealings.
Yeah.
When that got discovered, Cookie took the hit and went away for 17 years to prison.
Right.
In the meantime, her kids grew up.
Right. And so, the series begins with Cookie day she gets out of, and the company.
And she wants what's hers.
She wants what's hers. And then the company is poised to go public.
Right.
And so this is where we start the series. We're not giving anything away. That's actually episode one. Like, what?
So Cookie's got, everyone has an agenda. The older brother, Andre, is the one who's not a singer dancer. So he has this agenda about being the, like,
business head. And taking over the company.
I can't remember where he said he went to school. He mentioned it like
a Wharton school.
Yeah.
Like the Wharton school.
Wharton school. And then the baby is a rapper.
Right.
And Hakim.
Like,
and
a
then
bad
the
boy
middle
rapper.
One is Jamal, who's the sort of singer-songwriter.
Sensitive artist.
But we're watching all of their journeys. But the queer journey is something. In fact, Lee Daniels did an interview where he talked about his relationship with his dad and how his dad actually threw him in a garbage can as a kid when he found him dressed up like in his mom's heels or something like that. And so there was a brief flash a couple of weeks ago where we see that that's what Lucius, Terrence Howard character, did to Jamal when he was a kid.
Right. So it's got a lot of autobiographical moments of, at least,
I'm saying, it goes back and forth between being quite serious.
Right.
I mean, there was a scene, I don't want to give anything away for people who are not caught up, but there was a scene that you and I both marveled at this past week.
With the brothers.
A scene between three brothers.
That was...
And it was isolated. The space, I don't want to give anything away, but this space that they were in was controlled and isolated because of something that happened. And so it ended up forcing this scene between these three brothers in a very heightened, dramatic way.
Right.
In that way that is Shakespearean or Lion in Winter-esque, right? A heightened level of... Yep. Of immediacy and urgency. And it was acted so beautifully.
It was so intimate and so real. So Mitchell and I, like, turned to one another and we're like, I have tears streaming down my face.
And then, like, 5 minutes later, we were laughing because Cookie got drunk and Taraji P. Henson was being hilarious.
Yeah.
Drunkenly walking out of that recording studio.
I mean, it is, to me, Shakespearean in the way that when, you know, I used to say, you know, to me, when you say the word Shakespearean, it doesn't mean, oh, it's stuffy or there's
no
prose. It means that it is so, it goes so big and so small, so quick and on a dime.
Right.
You know, of like.
And so bawdy.
Like everybody dying in the end of Hamlet, but scenes before, you have very intimate, quiet soliloquies about life and death and fathers, and, you know, so it's like, I mean it Shakespearean in that way, that, like,
I
it can go from the macrocosm to the microcosm, to the fool, to the comedy, to the absolute gut-wrenching, it's all plausible. It all works. I mean, that's what's amazing.
It's
here.
It's exciting.
Is it all works.
It's exciting. I think about... the show that we've both of us have championed and we're both looking forward to the next season is Survivor's Remorse, which also deals with a African-American family that wasn't born into the wealth that they have now.
Right. The new American dream.
The new American dream. Right. Exactly. It's the new American dream. And the lesbian sister on that show, and how she's played for more comic effect and yet is really subversive and brilliant. And then we have... Jamal,
right,
and what looks like maybe a new love interest, this gorgeous British guy, who, because he's black, it'll be interesting to see what Lucius thinks about that, because we know that Lucius has an issue with Andre's white wife, and maybe Jamal's not black ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Right. That was part of an issue, too.
He has an issue with every one of his son's choices, because his youngest son is with an older woman. So, I mean, we really have, like, everything happening here.
It's,
and if you
so
say
good.
It out loud, it actually seems like, oh, my God, they've thrown everything into the soup box.
That's what I'm saying. It's like a nighttime soap opera.
But it seems like that's really what would be happening. You know what I mean?
I applaud.
Like, you never go, like, oh, this is too crazy. This is too out there. And the coolest thing, for those of us listening in the Midwest, is that it's happening here in Chicago.
Yeah, it is.
It's filming here in Chicago. There are some Chicago actors that have gotten
Yep.
Parts in it, and it has been picked up for a second season, and it's just all very exciting. It's very, very exciting.
You know, I was thinking too, like, it's such a heightened, especially for TV, like for regular TV. I mean, it's on Fox, but I mean, it's not HBO or Netflix or Amazon Prime. And
I don't miss any edge though. I don't go, they would do X, Y, or Z.
That's what's extraordinary.
Yeah, it keeps the story almost to me more. What we hoped
with all of this other programming, AMC, and all this new programming in this new golden age of television, what we hoped would happen, I think, is happening, which is that it's trickling down to what is considered more conventional television.
Yeah,
I also find it interesting too to compare. So another show that I watch that has LGBT interest is Looking, right on HBO, and it is. The thing that it gets most criticized for is the thing I like most about it, is that it's the opposite of these heightened Shakespearean level dramas.
It's not Queer as Folk at all. It's like the antithesis.
It's not Queer as Folk, and it's not Empire, and that the situations aren't heightened. It's about a day in the fairly mundane life.
It's not the themes of the... That's what I meant by Queer as Folk, because it was always kind of like the theme. Like the episode where somebody gets bashed.
Right.
The episode where you fall in love with a successful ball player.
Right, it was a soap opera. Looking is a soap opera. It's like a slice of life. So I think that... that makes for an interesting contrast. And then we've been watching, we're both a fan of...
Yeah, ABC's The Fosters.
ABC Family's The Fosters.
I mean, I got to tell you...
Co-produced by Jennifer Lopez.
Yes, and written by Bradley Bredewig and Peter Page, who was in Queer as Folk, played Emmett, the flamboyant Emmett. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I was thinking the other night, like after watching this last episode, like, thank you, J-Lo. I mean, I just love J-Lo anyhow, but you and I both do. She's so pretty.
We are both J-Lo.
My girlfriend said, is she getting prettier? She looks like she's getting prettier. You like her more now.
She's getting prettier.
She is getting prettier. But
I love her.
But thank God that she helped put this show on the air, because without her and, you know, her name, maybe it wouldn't have gotten made. Rosie O'Donnell having, you know, appearances, just beautiful performances. If you're not watching it, you can watch it on demand. Because it's just ABC Family.
Right.
But, you know, it's about an interracial lesbian couple in California,
Southern California.
Yeah, one's a teacher, one's a cop, or one's a
vice principal, and
a cop. And they, have these foster children, and thus they're the Fosters. Their names are also Foster, it is a teen show. So let's say it is a teen soap.
It is, except it deals with some adult stuff. I mean, this past week with the poor girl who ran away and she...
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely dealing with real issues. I mean, you'd think like, ABC Family, they're dumbing it down or they're playing it safe. They really aren't. And ABC is a very queer-friendly network, as we know. We've got, you know, How to Get Away with Murder. I mean, they were the first to have Alexander Billings on with Romeo and Michelle, and that was ABC Family, I believe. And then ABC with Grey's Anatomy had her on there. And they've just done a lot with LGBT storylines. But, you know, on this show, they've had trans characters that were in the foster house. Female to male trans character in the house. But, you know, supposedly this was, the Huffington Post said it's the youngest gay kiss in TV history, between the youngest foster kid Jude and his friend Connor, who've met. And I'm not sure if it's the youngest gay kiss, because those of you who are a little older might remember a show called Once and Again with Cela Ward. And that show had, at the time, a very young Evan Rachel Wood, who most people know as a bisexual. Mm-hmm. And she's in town, I think, doing Dear John Hughes now with Broadway in Chicago.
With Rumor Willis.
Yeah, with Rumor. She's taking over for Rumor, or coming in as Rumor goes out or something.
Because Rumor's doing Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, well, there you go. So you know all of it. Rumor has it. So Evan Rachel Wood had a very young lesbian kiss on that show when she was probably 13 or 14. So this may be gay, but I texted Mitchell and I was like, I don't know if you watch it every week, but will you watch it so we can talk about it? Because I found it to be so...
It's funny, I just caught
up. So real and so dear, and...
It was so much my experience. I mean, okay, so let's just say that...
And there's controversy.
The controversy around it is that they're kids.
Yeah.
But it's only... they're only controversy because the idea that a 13-year-old could know whether or not they were gay... First of all...
Well, we watched Glee, and they've got to be 14 or 15,
also,
so it's
gay,
like,
or straight... Gay or straight, we all get to have our first kiss at 13. I've talked about this on the podcast before. One of the issues for gay people, and I think specifically I can only speak to gay men, is one of the reasons why gay bars can be unbelievably fun and unbelievably annoying, mm-hmm. is that while straight kids get to have their first kiss at 13 and then kiss someone else the next week because they right. like this one and like that one.
Go to a dance or play spin the bottle with lots of teens.
Right, we don't get to do that until right. we come out, and that often coincides with also being able to drink.
Right.
So we go to bars and we behave like 13 and 14 year olds right. in bars, except we are adults and it's mixed with alcohol and it can be annoying.
Right.
But it's also necessary because we have to go through it. You can't skip. Gay people have been asked to skip that process for generations.
Adolescence. Not easy adolescence. Adolescence is easy.
Everybody gets to have their first kiss, and it usually happens then. And let's be honest, lots of straight people had their first kiss with someone of the same sex because that was easier to experiment with yeah. than someone of the opposite sex.
Maybe not most, but many people did.
Many people did.
Or they had it in college.
I don't think
drunk.
I said most. I think I said a lot of.
And many people, yeah. And some people have had them in college drunk or...
So the point is that the idea that two 13-year-olds kissing is obscene. First of all, the scene that's prior to it is they're just hanging out, they're throwing a football in the backyard, and then
playing
they start
Star Wars
to like...
video games.
Right, and they start to wrestle.
Now, and these are boys who have known one another.
Oh, yeah, they're best friends.
They're best friends.
And so that scene was so reminiscent of my childhood, where like there was a boy in my life who we would flirt around our physical contact. And the way to have physical contact was to wrestle and to like roughhouse and to like
yeah.
stuff like that. And there were often moments like in the show that was done so gorgeously where they're like, the roughhousing gets to a point where like, you can't go much further or you're going to hurt each other. And you, right. that's not going to happen. And then suddenly there's eye contact about like, whoa. Some unconscious knowledge of what we're really just doing is touching each other. Right. And then it gets
yeah.
awkward in a way that it would be for anyone.
Right.
And so there's a beautiful scene a little bit later where one of the kids wants to hang out. And Jude, the son,
yeah.
the foster's son, the foster's foster son, says, you know what? What's the deal with you? You kissed me in my tent on that camping trip. They had a brief kiss.
Right.
Which they didn't show. They just talked about yeah. it. And now... You sort of act like nothing's going
on. And then they went
on.
To a double date, like a junior high double date with two girls, but the guy sat in the middle and...
Pinky, like touch each other's pinky.
Touched each
I mean,
other.
Who hasn't been in that situation
with growing up? With their hands on the armrest.
Whether you're straight or gay, that you're sitting next to someone that you like, and like you think maybe that the person's knee touching yours is a sign of something, so maybe you put
Absolutely.
A little pressure back. It was so beautiful. It just happens to be two boys. Now I want to go down... to the kiss. So when he says, hey, what's going on? We had that kiss and now you're acting like nothing's going on. The other boy, mm-hmm. Connor's response was to lean in and kiss him.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, for lack of a better word, virginal.
Yeah, pure.
Pure. It was just a brief kiss. It didn't last long. They didn't make out. There were no hands. It was an absolutely appropriate kiss.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think...
They were knee-to-knee. They were on their knees.
Nobody,
they were not lying down.
Right.
There was nothing sexual
they
about it.
Off.
It was actually very intimate
it was romantic.
And sweet. And it wasn't it wasn't
Nobody
sexual at all.
Nobody got mad when Fred Savage got his first kiss from Winnie on
yeah.
Wonder Years. Nobody said, oh my God, he's too young. This is child pornography.
Well, you know, look, people are always going to complain about something. I mean, I really imagine that they've had an overwhelming amount of positive response because, you know, we just don't see this and young people don't see this, you know, and...
I think you read something to me earlier, really, a quote from the young actor.
Yeah, the actor who plays, that plays Jude every week. I mean, he identifies as straight. He's a 14-year-old boy.
Darling.
And he's just darling. I mean, that's the thing, too. They could say nothing. Their eyes, I mean, these boys
just
are just
darling.
Acting and they're just present.
I know, their acting is beautiful.
Their acting is beautiful, but honestly, they're just really present. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just so present. And he said, you know, basically... I want people to watch the show and see the struggle that Jude goes through and feel more comfortable about themselves, to feel like it doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight or bisexual or transgender or whatever you are, that you're happy with who you are and that you're accepting of yourself. My hope is that people watch the scene and they are happy to see something on television that represents them. You know, and I think that's really cool. Peter Page had said that, you know, we want, it's easy to sensationalize the headline, you know, young teenage boys kiss, so to
right.
speak. But he says it's hard to deny the truth or integrity of the whole story. We are here to tell true stories of what it is to grow up. And these are true stories of what it is to grow up as a young, potentially gay person. It's the truth, and that's it. And that's exactly what you're saying. Right. Like, that's my truth. And I mean,
it was my truth. I mean, that's
I would have fantasized about having a kiss with a girl at that age, but I never did. So I never kissed a girl until I was, you know, 20 years old. So,
I mean, that's the thing. I had this boy that I started fooling around with, like, sort of innocently, but then not so innocently, when I was pretty young, you know, like a best friend. I won't say his name.
And I know some straight women who can say the exact same story that you're saying.
What was interesting was,
or and the maybe thing they consider themselves bisexual, but they're married.
Yeah. And what's interesting for me was that the one thing we didn't do, and we started fooling around pretty young, sort of shockingly young, and then we continued to fool around through junior high school and high school, and basically until we graduated high school. And by that point, you know, we were adult males as far as like our body development goes, so we were having sex, and you know the one thing we didn't do?
Kiss. Well, and that's what I thought was really intimate about
this. For me,
this.
That's what broke my heart, was like, I wanted to kiss this boy so badly, and I think because of the times, if we had kissed, it would have meant to him that this was gay, as opposed to experimentation. Now, how crazy is it that two boys are basically fooling around every day after school from the age of 12 to 18, and they don't call it gay?
Yeah.
We could avoid calling it gay, because we never kissed. And one of the things that was so heartbreaking about this scene was I played that fantasy out where I out loud say to him, hey, remember we fooled around 2 days ago and then you ignore me the next day in school, or like we're hanging out now and you're pretending nothing happened. We just had sex, but basically, I mean, these two didn't, but like we were a little bit older, but like what gives? I can't do this anymore. And then what I would have loved as a teenager was to have him lean in and kiss me.
I mean, it is amazing that we get to have a show like that on television with a kid who is really being a kid, but is, you know, it's not
kids
like they're...
Kids kiss. Kids make out.
Kids kiss, but I'm just saying, you know, that Jude is in a family and in a situation, having been a foster kid and now finding a home, and, you know, and in this environment in which his words and his expression and his being validated, you know, and I think the courage that he has to say that to this young boy, it really shows you that the climate matters. You know, you didn't grow up in a climate where you felt like you could say that. I didn't feel like I grew up in a climate where I could kiss the girl.
He's empowered to say to this kid, hey, what gives?
And I think that's what's amazing, and that's some of the stories that we've talked about in past weeks, you know, of trans kids who are transitioning younger, or kids that are understanding they're transgendered, or, you know, and I mean, even just 15, you know, years ago with About Face Youth Theater, you know, hearing kids, you know, who are, you know, half my age at the time, you know, saying things like, you know, I want to go to the prom with my girlfriend or my boyfriend, or we should have a gay straight alliance in school.
Yeah.
And, you know, how this conversation in the climate is just really becoming much more fertile for kids to be able to give voice to the inner voices, you know, at times. And I think that's what this show's doing. You guys, Mitchell and I could talk about it for forever, but we're going to have Mitchell on the couch, hopefully at least one more time, maybe two more times before he sets sail. But
because you know what I'd like to talk about next time? I'd like to talk about Kate McKinnon on SNL and how she's killing it.
Well, and that's amazing too, that we finally have an openly gay character on Saturday Night
Live. And she's killing.
And she's the best thing on the
show. She's MVP.
Yeah, she's totally MVP.
Yeah.
I think she's going to be bigger than Wig, but I've just said it, and here I am, if she's not already.
Interesting.
That's what I'm saying. But anyhow, so I mean, we just need to continue to foster our representations on stage, pun intended.
Right.
Start watching Empire.
Empire fosters Survivor's Remorse, Looking.
Yeah, all of these are able to watch right now on
Neil Patrick Harris is going to have a variety show coming out in the fall.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Ellen's on every day. Like, let's make sure that we're supporting us.
Our
what
shows.
We're doing. Our shows, and we can be critical of them. We don't have to just take
crap. Well, it's just funny because we had like Queer as Folk, we had L Word for so many years, and like everybody watched. And I just want to make sure. And they were not, for whatever. I mean, they were what they were at the time. Where
satisfying,
they were.
But not necessarily aesthetically
but this
pleasing.
This is, we have gone to a whole new level now with, you know, integrating our stories, but our stories are still front and center in these stories. And to me, these are reflections and mirrors of real life. And I'm so excited.
These are not anecdotes or punchlines or Wink Wink or Prurience.
Right.
These are actual lives integrated into families and stories, whether it's the comedy of Survivor's Remorse or the drama of The Fosters.
Yeah, or the dramedy and music.
Or the dramedy of music
stylings of Empire.
And it's kind of amazing, and for all of my cynicism and ranting and raving, it's kind of exciting.
Next week, coming up, we have a director, Derek Von Barnum, who is going to be on with us talking about Angry Fags at Steppenwolf Theater.
Oh, yeah,
so
my friend James is in that.
I'm so excited. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.
Rumor has it he's the one I'm leaving you for.